Blog Talk Radio.
Spirit of Truth Ministry is delighted to bring you The Revelation of Jesus with Rick Sterling, where we test the beliefs of Christianity against the very words of Jesus that he gave his own eyewitness disciples. Join us for a unique and challenging study into truth, justice, and the kingdom of heaven. Hello, everyone. My name is Dennis Neufeld, and I am here back again with our Spirit of Truth Ministry team, Suzette, Larry, and Rick. And we're delighted that you've taken a few minutes out of your day to join us here on this July 30, 2016. Notice how I slipped that in. to be with us as we study to know and understand the truth. Before we get started with that, I want to remind you that I am monitoring the chat today. You can go to our chat room and type in any of your questions or comments, and I'll pass them along to the group as time and content permit. We also have two websites posted up on the chat room. The first is our WordPress website, spiritoftruthministry.net. You can find our book there. The book is called The Spirit of the Church by Rick Sterling and me, Dennis Neufeld. And that is a primer, basically, as to what it is that we do here and why we do it the way we do it at Spirit of Truth Ministry. The other website is our original website, and that has a lot of archived writing. And you can go to both of these places, bookmark them, and save them for later. They are a great resource. I want to just say thank you to Rick and Larry for allowing me the opportunity to go see my cardiologist yesterday rather than stick around for the show. I had a very good report and a very good meeting with my cardiologist, who normally would say, you know, I want you to go into a 12-week rehab program. He didn't say that. He said, I think that, you know, since you did that once before and you're on the right track now, I'm just going to let you do it yourself. So, and I appreciated that confidence. He also basically said and agreed with my primary physician in the fact that I don't have diabetes, which is a wonderful, I'm pre-diabetic, but that doesn't mean I have diabetes. And I do have to be careful, but there are lots of ways of living a wonderful life and eating well without going nutso-potso, which I actually feel better right now than I felt from a food standpoint, you know, not eating all the greasy foods. And I wasn't doing that much of that anyway. But the fact is, if you think about it, if you think about what you're eating and think about, for instance, the sugar content of just the stuff that you pull off the shelf, it can really nail you. And this is one of the reasons why type 2 diabetes is probably one of the fastest growing diseases in the world, not just in the United States.
Did you say think about what you're eating, Dennis?
Just, yes, I did. Think about what you're eating. And by the way, that's what we do here at Spirit of Truth Ministry. Thank you for that segue.
Think about it with your brain, not your taste.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Thank you, Larry.
We do have to think about what it is that we put into our bodies. In fact, even Jesus talked about that. Jesus even talked about that. So let us have prayer and we will get started. Father in heaven, thank you that we are here together again in the unity of your words and your spirit. I pray, Father, that as we move forward in our learning of the knowledge of truth, that you will, in your mercy, clear our minds away from all of the extraneous things that have caused us to look for truth in all of the wrong places, and show us where truth lives, and then put that truth in our hearts to live in us. I thank you for this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Good morning, Suzette.
morning.
And good morning, Larry.
Good morning.
And of course, good morning, Rick.
Of course.
From what I heard yesterday, as I was sitting in the waiting room before I was called, the show yesterday was great, and I'm going to listen to the rest of it today.
It's good to have you here at the table with us, Dennis. It's always nicer to have someone manning the controls over there.
I know I'm not indispensable, but it is nice to have a team that does this.
Yesterday, I spent quite a bit of time in the first chapter of John. And I did so to show confirming evidence, or evidence to confirm my earlier statements about the condition of the heart and mind of everyone on earth. Try this. Go to a family member first and say, are you living in spiritual darkness or in spiritual light?
Oh,
has the devil led you astray? Or is the devil the one leading you? Do that.
They would deny it.
Because to be led astray would mean you had been right in the first place. So, is the devil the one leading you?
No, that's what they say. No, no way.
So then you would say, who is leading you?
You'll say God.
God. And you say, do you know the truth? I would be surprised if they said yes. I would be surprised because most people believe that you cannot find the truth, that the truth is basically what is true for you.
That's why they say, of course.
Right. But if you say the truth,
they
not your truth,
no,
but
they won't get
the
it.
Truth.
Yeah.
Say, do you believe in the teaching of the Son of God and as has been written down by his own disciples? What would they say?
Of course.
Then that's where that's where John chapter 1 would inform them that they are living in darkness and they do not have the truth. And Revelation chapter 12 verifies that all the world has been deceived by the serpent, the dragon, the devil, the whole world. Now, when the judgment comes, and yesterday I started a conversation about the judgment, and it is a conversation because I am open to questions. Turn to Deuteronomy chapter 9, and I will be reading verses 1 through 6. Listen, Israel. Today you are about to cross the Jordan to go and dispossess nations greater and stronger than yourself, to capture great cities fortified to the sky, a people great and tall, these Anakim, as you know. You have heard the saying, who can stand up to the sons of Anak? Let's pause there. Who are the sons of Anak? And who is Anak?
Giants.
Have you heard of the personage Enki?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
No.
Who is Enki?
He's one of the Anak, one of the long-necked ones.
Long-necked, huh?
If any of you have read any of the books or any book written by Zachariah Sitchin.
By the way, there's another word too. It's Anunnaki.
Yes.
That is the group of the Anakim.
There's a couple of ways, or more than one way, I should say, of translating the word Anunnaki. Those who from heaven came down, right, or those who came down from the heavens to the earth, mm-hmm, or the cast down ones. Mm. The Anunnaki, if you have watched the History Channel, and sometimes they are on the Sci-Fi channel, and sometimes they are on the Science channel.
Any chance they're on 3ABN?
They will never be on 3ABN. You are informed of the UFOs, unidentified flying objects, and extraterrestrials. Extraterrestrials are also called ancient aliens. They are not from this earth, but they are on this earth. They came down from the heavens, and that is what Anunnaki means.
The cross-reference for this in the New Testament is Revelation 12:9, where it says the dragon was thrown down, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. Remember we talked about, you mentioned that earlier. He was thrown down to earth and his angels were thrown down with him. The word there for thrown is cast down.
So you're saying they're the Anunnaki?
These are the precursor of the Anunnaki.
They are the gods, small g, mm-hmm, of the nations, because they have deceived the nations. So when you look at Egyptian theology, Greek theology, Roman theology, Babylonian, Assyrian, Hattusian, or the Hittite, Druid, and any other number, the Mayan. The various nations in Africa all had a pantheon of gods, which had names of the from the languages of the peoples who worship them. And what they've found out is that these gods' names, when you translated them, all had the same meanings, the same identities. So in effect, what God, the God of Israel here is saying, is that you know that the gods, small g, mm-hmm. are in these cities that reach to the skies. Mm-hmm. And you know the technology that they have. And I want you to know that you will dispossess them. Now, just think about it. Say a UFO parked itself over your city.
A la Independence Day.
Yeah, no kidding.
And some extraterrestrials showed up, mm-hmm. gave a little demonstration of their power and ability, mm-hmm. and said, "We are here to save you."
I would bring out the throngs.
And say that the army decided it didn't need to be saved, and they were going to teach these extraterrestrials a lesson. Except that their jets wouldn't start, their military equipment wouldn't start. Mm-hmm. In fact, it would all fall apart. Mm. Their cannons and their guns wouldn't fire. Mm-hmm. What do you think would happen?
They'd have a change of heart.
But this is what the Israelites were facing. Gods who flew in the air, in the sky, in the clouds. Mm. This is not anything new. This is in India, Africa. All over, they knew about these gods that flew and had high technological weaponry. And God says, you know they're there. I know they're there. Trust me. They will not be there very much longer. Hmm. Verse 3. Be therefore sure today that Yahweh your God himself will go in front of you, a devouring fire that will destroy them. And he himself will subdue them for you. None of you will be killed in this. I am going to take care of all of your enemies before you even get there. Now, tell me, please, would you say, no thanks?
Just be an idiot.
I don't trust you. You know, you say that, but how do I know that you're not leading me into a trap? I think I'd rather stay at a safe distance. Even though there is no safe distance. It's like we were discussing earlier before we started the broadcast.
Hi, my name is Tim Schmidt. I'm the president and founder of the
USDA. Stop that.
Today I'm
Dennis is over there playing.
No, I was looking for something and I hit the wrong button.
Oops.
Anyway. While we have your finger there in Deuteronomy or your bookmark, I want you to turn to 1 Samuel.
Okay.
You'll find it just before 2 Samuel, of course, and then just before Kings. Just before the Kings.
Yeah.
1 and 2. 1 Samuel chapter 8. I'm going to start with verse 1. When Samuel grew old, he appointed his two sons as judges over Israel.
2 Samuel 8?
Mm-hmm. First Samuel 8.
Sorry.
The name of the firstborn was Joel and the younger Abijah. They were judges in Beersheba. Now, who had appointed them judges? Samuel.
Yeah, he did.
But his sons did not follow his ways. They wanted money, taking bribes, and perverting justice. Then all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah. Look, they said to him, you are old, and your sons do not follow your ways. So give us a king to rule over us like the other nations. It displeased Samuel that they should say, let us have a king to rule us. So he prayed to Yahweh. But Yahweh said to Samuel, obey the voice of the people in all they say to you, for it is not you they have rejected. They have rejected me from ruling over them. All they have done to me from the day I brought them out of Egypt until now, they deserted me and served other gods. They are doing now to you. Well then, obey their voice, only you must warn them solemnly and instruct them in the rights of the king who is to reign over them. Now you can turn back to Deuteronomy 9. I want to say this. God had promised to protect Israel. Right here, we read in Deuteronomy chapter 9, right at the beginning of the chapter, we read that God has promised to protect them. In fact, he said, I will go ahead of you as a destroying fire, and I will destroy all the gods, the Anakim, the Anunnaki. I will destroy all the gods of the people living in those great fortified cities. I will destroy all the people. Everything will be destroyed so that you can just move in. There'll be houses for you to move into, cities,
that'd be nice.
Crops, everything. It'll be there. But the people did not trust God. And the same, it hadn't changed. And God makes that point. It hadn't changed when the people asked Samuel to give him a king. God says, Samuel, it's not you they have rejected. It is me. And they have rejected me from the day I brought them out of Egypt. They have served other gods. What do the other gods do? And who are these other gods? Most people would think that these other gods are just made up fabrication, fantasies, myths, and legends of beings that don't really exist. It's just one culture creates their own deity who has no basis in reality. They give them all these characteristics, and of course they go out to do battle with their neighboring nation because they want to They want to show that the God that they have made up is more powerful than the God of the nation that they have made up. Please. These gods, small g, of the nations are absolutely real. And they promise the nation who worships them that they will give them victory in battle. Of course, it may come at a high price of human life, the sons of the people of the nations will have to go to war, and many, many will die. But hey, you will have the victory. So here is what God, capital G, offers. He offers this. Your sons don't have to die. In fact, they won't die. In fact, none of your sons will have to join the army. None of your sons will have to go to war and lay down their life to protect your nation. I, God says, I will go ahead of you. And I'll wipe out that nation. Not in a battle of conquest. Because God does not destroy a people unless the judgment, the verdict in the judgment requires it. So think about what God is offering Israel here that we're reading. He's saying, follow me, and you will have safety, and you will have a home, and you will have food, and it will cost you nothing. Reading on. So, you will dispossess them and destroy them quickly, as Yahweh has promised you. Do not say in your heart, when Yahweh your God has driven them before you, it is for my own goodness that Yahweh's brought me to the possession of this land. When it is for their wickedness, Yahweh dispossesses these nations for you. It is not for any goodness or sincerity of yours that you are entering their land to possess it. No, it is for the wickedness of these nations that Yahweh your God is dispossessing them for you, and to keep the word that he swore to your forefathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Be in fact sure. Now that's a pretty strong opening statement. Be in fact sure then that it is not for any goodness of yours that Yahweh gives you this rich land to possess, for you are a headstrong Israel had chosen their own way. And what God was doing for them was not because they had come to know him and because they obeyed him and because they had become righteous. It was for two reasons. First, God had made a promise to Abraham, his friend, and to Isaac, the promised son, and to Jacob, the father of the 12 patriarchs. He had made a promise to them that he would give their descendants the land of their sojourning as a home. And the reason that God had to wait the 400 years from the time that he made the promise was that these nations had not reached the full cup of iniquity. Mm. When they had reached the full cup of iniquity, God had the lawful right to dispossess them of the land and then to give it to the Israelites. He was not giving it to them because they deserved it, because they were righteous. He was giving it to them because he had promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and because the nations living there had reached the limit of forgiveness, which is why I'm sure that it was that particular land that God promised to give Abraham, the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, because he knew that is when the limit of forgiveness would be reached by those nations.
I can hear proponents of righteousness by faith through grace using one verse of this to confirm that theology, that it is not because of our righteousness or our uprightness that God saves us. It is because God loves us so much that he can't stand to be away from us and have us away from him. They would use Deuteronomy 9:5. It is not for your righteousness or for the uprightness of your heart that you are going in to possess the land. If you stop there and don't finish what you just said, that could easily be used as a cut and paste proposition to confirm that our righteousness does not matter to our own salvation. But see, this was not what God was talking about here, as you have just described.
And there's another question. Paul tells us that no human flesh is capable of accomplishing the demands of righteousness. Now, first of all, the Son of God, he in human flesh.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Is there any doubt about that? Because, and I believe, I know he was in human flesh. He was flesh and blood. He became flesh and dwelt among us.
Right.
But what Paul says is, no human flesh can ever meet the demands of righteousness. So then, would he deny that Jesus came in the flesh?
Mm-hmm.
He would have to.
Yeah.
Turn to Matthew chapter 24, where we left off yesterday. Now, I talked about the judgment yesterday, and I'm hoping that I showed a complete enough picture to take up here where we're going to take up. Much like a jigsaw puzzle, each element of information is placed alongside other information where it fits, so that you begin to see the parts of the picture that you're working on and other parts that you're looking for to fit. Matthew 24, and we are, I'm going to spend some time starting with verse 42. And I will first of all say this, because some of you may think to ask this. I have been asked, and of course my wife doesn't really ask me, she informs me or whatever. Are you saying that you are this person? I am not saying I am this individual. What I am saying is that the description of this individual describes what I am doing. So if I am doing what it says this individual will be doing, then I cannot say, no, I'm not. But until such time as I would be informed, I am going to say that all I'm doing is what this individual is described as doing and make no further claim on myself. And those who have been with me for a long time know that from the very beginning, all I've ever claimed to be is a student. And a student has no authority. Although a chief resident and a fellow has a certain amount of authority, even though they are still students. And I was looking at Larry's Bible and thinking that before I started doing this, I had several Bibles that all stayed in really pretty good condition. But when I started studying and putting things together, developing an understanding, I wore out 5 or 6 Bibles. I mean, they just fell apart. And I was thinking, you know, Bibles weren't meant to really be to have any research done in them. Yeah, they don't hold together. Which is an interesting statement. Okay, verse 42 of Matthew 24. So, stay awake. There's a good question. Ask your friends in the spiritual context or your family, are you awake spiritually? And what do you think they will tell you?
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Of course I'm awake. No one is going to admit to being asleep.
Oh, heck no.
How morally ethical is it to go around making people lie?
Well, you know that tally sheet. No, I'm just kidding. So stay awake. And so everybody says, okay, we're all awake.
Yes.
If everyone is awake, then God misjudged. And if God misjudged, how can he be the righteous, true judge if he's misjudged? And we read in Deuteronomy chapter 9, and God says, this people, I'm going to bring them into this land, but the only reason I'm going to bring them into this land is because they're not righteous and they're not just and they don't deserve it. I'm only going to bring them into this land because I made a promise. I made a promise to my friend Abraham, and I fully intend to keep that promise, even if the offspring of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are nothing close to what their forefathers were.
Just a thought question. Deuteronomy 9, is that still an applicable model for the end time scenario when God is going to defeat wickedness and reward his kingdom?
Oh, it's applicable.
And is he still going to honor his commitment to Abraham? Is God going to accomplish that in the same manner?
He honored his commitment to Abraham. He did. He honored his promise to Abraham, and he did give his offspring the land as their own possession. They lost it. Okay? God honored his promise, but the offspring of their progenitor to whom the promise was made. And right there in the promise, in fact, we can read it. Dennis, if you want to look that up, I think it's in Genesis 15, it's either 15 or 17. God made it very clear that he said, you and your descendants after you walk blamelessly before me.
I'm not wanting to push you in a diversion here. The short point I wanted to make or illustrate is that the next time God brings people into a promised land, they will be righteous. And it's the offspring of Abraham will still be rewarded, but they will be the spiritual offspring of Abraham rather than the genetic offspring.
Okay, here's the thing, and this is what you're saying, Larry. God did what he did because he made a promise. And God did what he did because the people of the promise did not meet the conditions of the promise. But God promised to Abraham a country for his descendants to live in as their own. They chose to lose it, and they were taken into captivity. And all the information is there. God is very clear, very, very clear why they left the land, even though he had promised it to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And you find today that there are people who are saying that Israel has a right to that land because God promised it to Israel and that land. What they fail to understand, because they're so immersed in grace, that God informs all who take the time to read why they lost the land.
Here are the two pertinent texts in Genesis 17, verse 1 and verse 7. Now, when Abraham was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to Abraham and said to him, I am God Almighty. Walk before me and be blameless. Verse 7, I will establish my covenant between me and you and your descendants after you throughout their generation for an everlasting covenant to be God to you and to your descendants after you. Predicated on what? Being blameless.
Exactly. And God makes it very clear, we read in Deuteronomy 9, I'm bringing you into the land, but not because you're blameless. I'm bringing you into the land because I made a promise, and because the people that I'm dispossessing so that you can move in have reached the limit of forgiveness. And, you know, that's why God says, go in there and kill every living human being, from the oldest of the old to the youngest of the young, kill them all. Oh, babies? You kill babies and pregnant mothers, and you take the babies out of the womb and you kill the babies? Oh, how terrible that is.
This is the difference between individual salvation and corporate salvation. The nations are judged as nations, not as individuals. And this, and the kingdom of heaven, this is why we're going to get there eventually in Matthew 21, you know, 42, 43. The nations of the world are judged by the same standard as the nations of the kingdom of heaven. The same standard applies. And when they reach the limit of forgiveness that God has meted out for everyone, there is no more hope of them becoming righteous. At that point, now, they can be destroyed.
Here's the thing. The devil, we are told, is the wisest of all creation.
Really?
Created being, he has great wisdom. And some would say that he has shot himself in the foot, but he did so with the firm belief that he could accomplish his own purpose. Now, the devil knows that his existence depends on humanity. Oh, yeah, he doesn't really like humanity other than he likes to play war games with them and do, because he doesn't get affected. But, oh, it, you know, it's fun to play chess with humanity and have this nation go bomb that other nation and genocide and torture. And, oh, he's all into that. But he doesn't want them to get to the place that they had arrived at the time of the flood. Because he knows this time he won't escape. He knows this time when the world has reached the limit of forgiveness that he will be put to death right along with all those who are in his kingdom. And he needs to keep humanity from getting to that point. And believe me, he's working on that very hard. Some would think that it would be an easy thing for him, but no. You know, once you get humanity going, the evil tyrants of the world going, they will go on ahead of their leaders. Some say, why would God, a loving God, say kill babies, infants, mothers, nursing? Why would God say kill them too, along with the old, the you know, the lame, the old, kill them too? How many pregnant mothers were killed in the flood?
All of them.
How many infants?
All of them.
How many young children?
All of them.
How many old men and women?
They were all destroyed.
They were all. So, what would God need to do once humanity has reached the limit of forgiveness so that he would humanely, from killing the old and the very young? Judgment would never come. When the man and the woman in the garden ate from the tree, and the penalty for eating from the tree was death by execution, God would put them to death because they had disobeyed a direct command from God. Kind of in your face, God, I'm doing what I want to do anyway. And what God had been very clear about what he would do. Others try to soften it, you know. God, they became mortal. That was them dying. They took a long time to die, but they eventually died.
Well, but see, and again, people just don't think and understand that they were already mortal, which is why God put the tree of life that they could eat from in the garden.
Exactly. Now, did the man and the woman have any offspring when they, on the day that they ate the fruit?
No.
So if they had been put to death, what would happen? They don't have any children. Now they're dead. What would happen? Some believe they were the only human beings on earth. So even if they were the only human beings on earth, who would be left on earth?
Nobody.
Nobody. There were
just
no
animals.
The extraterrestrials.
Oh, that's true. Yes.
There was no one to carry on the testimony.
Now, I believe, backed up by information and evidence, that there were nations of people living on the world, at the earth, at the time that God created the man and the woman, put them in the garden, and that his purpose was that they were going to inform the nations that they were being deceived by the Anunnaki.
Mm-hmm.
And that the man and the woman would have offspring How that would be, I don't know. There hasn't been any information given. But the fact that they had offspring because their execution was stayed, okay? The stay of execution is not forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
A stay of execution just means you won't be executed today, but you will be executed. The stay of execution was put into force so that if someone who qualified to pay the price of their disobedience, to pay the penalty, the price for their disobedience, and not be guilty. And so, in other words, they're not paying for their own debt, but they're paying the debt of the man and the woman. Then because they had no offspring, the offspring's debt could be covered by the one who paid it for their mother and father. But the offspring still have the debt because the mother and the father had a stay of execution, so the offspring were born, so the offspring inherit the debt.
Mm-hmm.
But payment can be made in full and cover all of those. And what is it that I talked about the trust that was set up when the Son of God paid the debt, which was being executed by God? He paid the debt for whom?
If this is otherwise known as the Kingdom of Heaven Trust.
Yes.
Now these people, starting with Adam and Eve, and eventually their offspring, when they sinned, who did they then belong to? And this paying of their debt, was it to pay for their sinning, or was it to redeem them back if
The payment of debt was the debt of death, eternal death, by the way, because God was not going to put them to death and then raise them up and say, okay, I hope you learned your lesson. The penalty was second death, where God puts you to death, and that's it. He doesn't resurrect you again. If he's put you to death once, he doesn't resurrect you. So what the Son of God paid was he was executed by God. The thing is that he didn't owe that debt. So he didn't stay dead. He stayed dead for the required amount of time to show that he was, in fact, dead. But because he was not guilty, the grave could not hold him. Now, in the time we have left, about 5 minutes or so, 6 minutes, Matthew 24. So stay awake. Verse 42. So stay awake because you do not know the day when your master is coming. Stay awake because you do not know the day. As we read on, we'll find out that if you are awake, you will know the day. Okay? Stay awake because you don't know the day, so that you will be awake to know the day. And as I read on, we'll see that. You may be quite sure of this, that if the householder, the head of the house, the one in charge, which is the servant given the responsibility of keeping the master's house in order. This servant acts on behalf of his master in the absence of his master. If the householder or head of the house had known at what time of night the burglar would come. So he's talking about the coming like a thief. Coming like a thief. I don't have a lot of time, but I do want to say this. Many people believe that the coming like a thief occurs at the end of the Great Tribulation. Some believe in the rapture, which happens before the Great Tribulation. No, it doesn't. There is no rapture, and I'm sorry to inform you of that. There's not going to be people disappearing off the face of this earth in mass leaving, you know, airplanes to crash and cars to crash and, you know, work left undone. No. Mm-hmm. Coming like a thief, they believe, is when he comes in the clouds, because it sounds that way when he says, as the lightning that flashes in the east can be seen in the west, so every eye shall see him, and so will be. And, you know, that's hardly like a thief in the night, spiritually in the night. If you have night, you have no signs. You have no wonders. You have nothing. Life is going on as usual, which is what he says, as it was in the days of Noah. And the other thing is that if these bridesmaids do have something, if they do have to get the bride ready, and the bride has to be ready when the bridegroom comes, which would be coming in the clouds at the end of the Great Tribulation. The bride has to be ready. In fact, we're told in Revelation that the bride is ready. We're told also here in Matthew that the bridesmaids, chapter 25, 1 through 13, the bridesmaids who are supposed to get the bride ready are sound asleep, and that the announcement that wakes them up is the bridegroom is here. So if they're supposed to get the bride ready, but they sleep through the time when they're supposed to be getting the bride ready, and then they're awakened and said, okay, the bridegroom is here, and half of them go to heaven and half of them don't, that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. Because who got the bride ready?
No,
see?
In that case, there would be no bride.
Exactly. So the master returns before the Great Tribulation starts. In fact, that's what we're talking about here. So if he had known at what time of night the thief was coming, so when the master comes without signs and wonders, mm-hmm. without appearing in the sky, but comes at night when everyone's asleep, no signs and wonders, mm-hmm. and he comes, does he find this person awake and ready, or sleeping along with the rest of the household? It sounds like this person is in charge of making sure the servants in the household are awake and ready, so when the master comes, they can immediately start the work that will bring to conclusion the wickedness and sin in this world, and ultimately accomplish the plan for restoration that God has put in place. And it says that if he had known at what time of night the thief would come, he would have stayed awake and would not have allowed anyone to break through the wall of his house. Therefore, you too must stand ready, because the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. So if you believe that the Son of Man is going to come at the end of the Great Tribulation in the clouds of glory to take everybody home, if you believe that, and everybody in your church believes that, and everybody in your denomination believes that, and all your Christian friends believe that, then would God be less than truthful if he said he's coming when you don't expect him?
Thank you, Rick. Thank you, everyone, for being here today. We encourage you to go back in a few minutes when Blog Talk Radio gets this posted. You can download it and any number of other of our past programs. We encourage you to join us again next Friday for another edition of the Bible on Trial, and a week from today at 10 a.m. for another edition of the Revelation of Jesus with Rick Sterling. So on behalf of Spirit of Truth Ministry, this is Dennis Neufeld, wishing you a wonderful, happy Sabbath. We'll see you next week.